This is Fantasy Football Friday with Ty Richardson.
All right, welcome back into Fantasy Football Friday. I'm your host, Ty Richardson. We're going to do a little something different today that we have not done thus far. It's going to be a little off the wall, a little more personal, a little more hunky-dory, but it's going to be fun, so I think you're going to really enjoy it. I have a guy here in Fort Smith named Evan Gentry, who is a big-time fantasy football guy. Evan has been one of my good friends since I moved to the Fort Smith area. He participates in the Wormhole League. Evan, have you ever won that league? I don't even know.
I have. It's been a few years, and it was at the original history of the league. So, you know, the proof, I don't know if it's there, if you could find it in the documents, but I won it twice.
So it's not on the actual trophy?
No, the trophy was a new addition in the last couple of years. I won it with, this is how long it's been since I've won it. RG3 was my quarterback that year.
The Redskins, his rookie year.
Yes. I think it was 11, and it was the year they won the division because it was him and Alfred Morris, and they wrecked that year.
That was a talented team, and he went on to tear his ACL at the end of the year, if I remember that correctly.
RG3?
Right? Yeah.
They hosted Seattle at home in the divisional round, and remember it was controversy because people thought Shanahan played RG3 when he probably should not have played, and lo and behold, he tore his ACL. And then Cousins came in, and they almost won, but isn't it funny how that can change as fast as a change? Like, he looked like the future of the NFL once upon a time. And he's actually, to his credit, still in the league. He's a backup. But
yeah, for your Ravens.
He is. I hope I never have to see him. But maybe in, like, a victory formation or something like that.
That's true. So I have an RG3 story for you that I don't think I've told you before. So the only Oklahoma game I've ever been to in Gaylor Memorial was when they took on Baylor, and it was Bradford, and they just kicked the snot out of them. I don't even remember if RG3 was playing. He might have been injured, and if he was, Baylor was not the Baylor the year that he won the Heisman Trophy when he had guys like Kendall Wright. I think Josh Gordon was also
Josh
on
Gordon,
the team.
Josh Gordon, Kendall Wright, Terrence Williams.
Yeah, you know your Baylor history, but the story goes is we're sitting in the Baylor section, right? It's a small section. There's not a lot of people who made the trip because they knew they were just going to get absolutely mossed that year by Oklahoma. And I see a guy with a Robert Griffin button. And I'm like, that's got to be his dad. I'm just taking the obvious. My young self, using my common sense, like, that's got to be his dad. So my dad's like, go up and talk to him. So I'm stumbling. I'm like, hey, Mr. Griffin, do you think you could get your son to sign a piece of paper and send it to this address? He's like, well, sure, buddy. And he gives me his phone number. And so I text him after the game with the address and everything. We exchanged. A month or two goes by. I was like, hey, Mr. Griffin, just want to say I still haven't gotten anything. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry, buddy. Let me see that. A couple months go by. Hey, Mr. Griffin, just want to let you know. I'm still about to put it in the mail, so I got it for you. I think a week or two later, I get this package. I open it up. It is a signed picture, George W. Bush and Robert Griffin. And it's signed from George W. and Robert Griffin, says to Ty, something like my biggest fan or something like that.
W. signed it?
Yeah. W. had it signed, I think, for Robert with him together.
And he just forwarded it over to you?
And he just gave it to me. And it wasn't like a copy. Like, you can tell the Sharpie, not one of those things where they just copied it and did it. It's a real thing.
What a stand-up guy. So is this in your apartment currently?
Yeah.
It is?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to steal that next time.
I was going to say, don't steal it. For those listening, don't steal it.
You're going to want to buy a gun safe and put that in it.
But it's just sitting up on my dresser right now. That is probably my most prized possession, is that. And to this day, I will never say a bad word about Robert Griffin or his family because of that. And I really would rather you not criticize.
No. I love RG3. That story is incredible because just an RG3 autograph by itself would be incredible.
Yeah.
But it wasn't just RG3. It was one of the past future leaders of the free world. That makes it even crazier.
Yeah, it was cool. I had a couple friends that went to Baylor at the time that he was going to school. And he didn't go around campus acting like he was RG3. He would always introduce himself as Robert. When you're introducing yourself to someone, I don't ever say my last name. Do you? You might say, because you're more in the business. I guess I am too, but I always just say I'm Ty.
I'd say it's a mixed bag. I think you kind of feel the situation out. Sometimes a last name is warranted, but if it's just, you know, your standard social gathering, I don't think so.
What I typically do, if they say their last name, I'll say mine. But I took a lot from that story, and even to this day. And then people be like, "Oh, you're on the radio sometimes." That didn't happen that often, but occasionally that does. And I always took a lot out of that story. Not ever, because I mean Heisman Trophy winner, like the it guy.
Well, I will
on
say,
the campus of Baylor at the time.
It probably would have thrown you off had he introduced himself as RG3, right? I mean, it would have been cool, but I don't know if you would have seen that coming.
Yeah, no, that would have been interesting.
Back to RG3, you mentioned the Oklahoma-Baylor game you went to. The notable RG3 Oklahoma game was when they beat us. Yeah, I think it was like 48-45.
It was like 12 seconds left.
You have the ball bouncing off guys' helmets and then running it in for a touchdown.
Yep.
And, yeah, it was like with 6 seconds left. And that was – Oklahoma's always had bad defenses. That year it was particularly bad. And – with like 12 seconds left on like a 3rd and 6, he scrambled all day, hit, I think it was Terrence Williams, in the back of the end zone for a touchdown. And what's funny about that game is if Oklahoma had won that game, Oklahoma would have played Arkansas in the Cotton Bowl, because that was the year that Kansas State went. And they do that according to, like, you know, Big 12 2
ranking
versus SEC 4. And Arkansas would have slaughtered Oklahoma that year. And I'm rather thankful that didn't pan out, because I would have had to change my name and move to Alaska had that happened.
Arkansas hasn't played Oklahoma since
2001.
Yeah, I was going to say it was a while ago. And that was the year after their national championship,
it was.
Correct?
They beat Florida State in the Orange Bowl in 2000, and we're supposed to get back the next year. And I wasn't even really old. I wasn't watching. These are all things I've...
You were like six, right?
Yeah, I was probably playing with Legos
or
putting a puzzle together.
So the Ravens, Lamar Jackson is one of those guys that a lot of fantasy people were going back and forth on this year based on a couple different variables. I think a lot of people were holding on to the fact that he played the Chargers, beat them in the regular season. 2 weeks later, they get knocked out in the playoffs. And that left a lot of people with bad taste in their mouths, thinking that, oh, they're just, the defense are going to hone in on him and it's just going to be bad. To this point, and I know they have won that one loss to the Chiefs, but the Chiefs didn't really stop him. That was just more of Patrick Mahomes doing Patrick Mahomes things. He's really come on in year two, man.
Yeah, I could talk about the Chiefs forever, but I think people have this kind of, and I'm guilty of it too. The last thing people see, I think, resonates with them quite a bit. So the last game Lamar Jackson played before his season was over, he, I think, went 2 hours of real time without completing a pass. And everyone was watching. It was the playoffs. And so the narrative into the offseason is, well, this guy just can't throw, period. And listen, he struggled. I mean, if you watch the film, he's overthrowing guys. He's missing guys. It most certainly wasn't pretty. But his best receiver was also Willie Snead. And I don't care who you are, that's not necessarily a recipe for success. So, you know, another thing about Lamar Jackson is he came into the year, we were 3-5. The Ravens were 3-5 when he took over for Joe Flacco. Mid-year, they just run this entirely new offense. They implement it in like a bye week and didn't really have any time to kind of get it, you know, to build the foundation of it. Another offseason later, Hollywood Brown, another year Mark Andrews, signed Mark Ingram. They put pieces around him to succeed. And his first week against the Dolphins was, that's not going to happen. That's not sustainable. But his ability to rush for 70, 80 yards a game and a touchdown, you know, for fantasy, when you get 1 point per 25 passing yards, mm-hmm. and 1 point for rushing yards, if you can rush the ball, if you can run the ball effectively at all, it is such an advantage, all things equal, because as good as the Aaron Rodgers, as good as the Mahomes are, you know, they aren't taking off for 100 yards a game.
How much did Wayne Gallman go for in y'all's league? With Saquon Barkley going out with a high ankle sprain, he's going to be out for a considerable amount of time. How much did Gallman go for in y'all's league?
He went in our league. We have a $200 budget.
Okay, ours is 100.
He went for 68 to one. A name drop, I believe Tyler Teague here. Tyler hasn't had the best start to the year.
Bad name drop.
Maybe he was a little bit desperate. I'm not sure. I'm not going to speak for him. But I think he maybe felt a little bit extra pressure to. He had to make sure he had him on his roster.
It's one of those things where if Daniel Jones continuously plays, which I think kind of like you're referring to the Lamar Jackson Miami game, I don't know if Daniel Jones playing like he did against the Bucs on Sunday is going to be sustainable. You hope it is, but how much value, I wonder, is Gallman going to be worth if Jones looks like a rookie at some times this season?
Well, first of all, that was incredible, that game on Sunday. I mean, it makes you wonder, like, why in the world did they not have him out there week one? Like, what? Look, if this guy was doing any of those things in practices, like how can you, with the clear conscience, still continue to roll Eli out there? If you've been watching Giants game for the last 2 or 3 years, I mean, it's just, it's bad. Like, it's not, it is not fun to watch. I don't think what Daniel Jones did on Sunday, he can sustain really in any capacity. But he's just doing basic things well. I mean, the fantasy value that guys like Sterling Shepard, even guys like Golden Tate when he comes back, and to your question, Wayne Gallman, it's just an opportunity. It's more of an opportunity because, you know, he rushed for 2 touchdowns on Sunday. And I think I heard some crazy stat where, like, he already passed Eli in career rushing touchdowns just based on Sunday alone. So with him, even the threat to open it up like that, Gallman's going to get an opportunity. Shepard's going to get an opportunity. Evan Engram, who's already nails, is going to get a bigger opportunity.
Yeah, and that was one of the rushing touchdowns you mentioned came on a 4th and 7, 4th and goal situation that, you know, Eli would have probably just taken the sack at that point.
That's a play Eli could not have made for 10 years.
100%. So yeah. Fantasy football punishments, we always bring them up on the show. You guys in the Wormhole League, which is sort of, in a sense, sponsored by Bell Point Beverages.
Because loosely. A loose affiliation.
Yeah, loose affiliation. Big Tim, Little Tim McGuire. Helpful for that. I was actually the bartender for you guys this draft, which was a lot of fun. It was interesting to watch you guys converse and do all that. But
you also signed a non-disclosure agreement that you anything said at that draft.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's why we're not really going into any more than that. But so the punishment situation, you guys do something that I find interesting that no one else does. For our punishments last year, I had to dress up as Harley Quinn and go to the Comic-Con.
Suicide Squad.
Yeah, that was awful. That was the worst 2 hours of my entire life. I've never been more embarrassed. We've had to wax my buddy's legs. I don't remember.
You said you didn't have a sip of alcohol during that night either.
No, it was during the day, and I had to drive to it and drive back, so I'm not trying to get a D-dub by doing that. But
wouldn't that be funny? You get pulled over in a Harley Quinn outfit.
Yeah, that picture taken in the Dallas Penitentiary or wherever I'd be going.
Your makeup smell smeared.
Yeah, that would be quite rough. So I do that this year. I think I've told you that we're doing the nightclub routine where you got to be up like 10, 15 minutes and have your own stand-up routine. Some of my friends would be good at it. I'm lower tier when it comes to the funniest of my friends, but I'm decent at public speaking. So I'd be okay in that aspect. Some of my friends are really funny, but they're terrified of public speaking, so I'm kind of curious to see what would end up happening if one of my friends does it. For you guys in the Wormhole League, each punishment is different. Each punishment is applicable to their own person. They have to sign off on it before meeting you guys and hearing about these punishments and then kind of seeing them develop. I never heard of that before.
Yeah, so everyone has to basically put to a vote their proposed punishment. And it has to get passed with a majority. We've seen situations where punishments have been shot down. There's a lot of really bad punishments we have. One guy just straight up has to get pepper sprayed if he gets in last. One guy has to run a marathon, which isn't bad enough. We get to choose what he wears during the marathon. So it definitely provides an incentive where, you know, what you don't want is you don't want people losing interest late into the year because, you know, it makes it's not as much fun if people have already checked out. So by doing this, you incentivize people to play all 18 weeks. And I mean, I was in the last place pool last year, and I had the intensity as if I was in the championship. I mean, because, you know, what was my punishment last year? I had to have raw eggs thrown at me, like a barrage of raw eggs. And I think I'd probably still smell bad had that happened.
Yeah, that would be tough. So you guys have a trophy. We mentioned it kind of at the start of the program. You have a beautiful looking, almost similar to Lombardi trophy,
yeah.
A lot smaller. My brother and his group of friends in a league I used to participate in, I'm only a one-man league guy now just because I only have time to focus on one league and only have time basically to accept the punishment for one league. They have big antlers on it. They got it mounted and everything. Their trophy is huge. They got an Arkansas helmet and everything. One of the things that I've been in talks with one of our members of the league.
League members.
Nard about is we need to get a trophy for our league. And seeing you guys have one, seeing my brother's league have one, I think it's time that we step up and invest in a trophy, not only for the winner, but you also have to have a sacco as well, in addition to what the proposed punishment is for the sacco.
I think that's a great project for you to spearhead. You know, work through some mocks, pull the Google Paint app up, just start freestyling, so you can come up with. Ours was clean, you know. I've seen these trophies where it's, It looks sort of like a, you know, something pagans would worship with all this extra stuff on it. We just have the regular Lombardi. My name's not on it yet. I'd like for it to be someday. I think the thing with the trophy, though, is if you do win it and you get to keep it for a year, I think it's just going to get in the way. Because let's be honest, you know, in the spring and the summer, are you really looking at that thing
I'm
like a memory?
Displaying that thing perfectly. When people walk into my apartment and they see just a random trophy and they ask, what's that? It's like, oh, I won my fantasy football league last year. Now, I don't know if I'm ever going to win my league because I'm terrible at fantasy football. And the reason I do this podcast is to get more insight. I know this is just more of us goofing off, shooting the you-know-what, but like when I have people on, it's more to get their insight. I am abundantly clear when it comes to my position and how I am. I'm bad. I've been in the championship in our league one time. I got clobbered by like 40. But
you were there, though.
Yeah, I was there. So, and I get a lot of flack just because I'm an easy target when it comes to just messing with us in our league, but I would absolutely display that the entire year and take great pride in everyone who walked into my apartment and said, hey, man, what's that? Oh, I won my fantasy league this year. Again, I don't know if it's ever going
to
happen.
If you happen to have a female over at your apartment, she points to that trophy and says, hey, what's that? How long's your spiel? 2-3 minutes?
It just depends on her love or hate or if she cares about sports or not. But I can't really see myself dating a girl if she doesn't have at least the slightest interest in sports. I think you'd be the same way. You might be worse.
Well, I think that's actually a funny question because I think there's arguments for both sides. If I have, you know, if you're dating a girl who's like diehard like you are, and maybe she cheers for a different team, there's going to be some conflict there eventually. You know, I mean, that's just like
all's fair in love and war.
That is destined for disaster. You know, I think there's an argument for the girl just having no idea what's going on and like calling the Super Bowl the World Series because then you don't really ever have to worry about any kind of potential conflicts. Like, you know, if you were married to an LSU fan, once a year you guys are just like two Rams going at it.
Justin Moore's wife's an LSU. Did you know that? Justin Moore, country singer, his wife is from Louisiana. I can't remember what part, but she's an LSU fan. And one of the conditions, not really conditions, but when they got married, his mother-in-law brought over some LSU stuff for her kids. And he's like, no, we can't take that. And I don't remember if he threw in the garbage, but it was like, they're not wearing this. So,
and he probably wasn't kidding either. Like, yeah, that's the thing.
It's
like,
serious.
It, you know, it sounds fun and it sounds cute, but get that out of here.
You watched the league, correct?
I have seen the league, yes.
Okay, who is Kevin's wife in the league?
I can't remember her.
Why
her
am I blank? I'm gonna have to look.
Jenny,
I think might be right. I that's who I picture of you, someone marrying, because you, as much as I love sports and as much as I love talking about sports, you might be the one guy this area that talks more than I do about sports.
I'm sure all my friends love that.
Would you say that's a fair characteristic?
I would say that's a fair characteristic. Maybe I'm working on toning that down a little bit, but
no, it's endearing. Part of you.
Back to your point on being bad at fantasy football. I actually think that
Jenny, that's it.
I think there's an argument that, and maybe this is a cop out for myself who hasn't had much success the last few years. I think the more you know about football, the actual game, almost kind of hinders your ability to be good at fantasy because so much of fantasy is just opportunity. And there's guys who are not good football players who in the right situation can go out and just win you games. And, you know, if you're just a football fan and you're just watching the X's and O's pretty intently, let's say you're watching the offensive line, you're one of those guys, I actually think it's kind of harder to, you know, willingly pick up a guy you know is bad, even though, well, the opportunity is there because he's the only one they're throwing the ball to. So I think sometimes that can actually hurt you. Or maybe that's just an excuse for myself. I don't know.
No, because I think you can kind of relate that to NCAA tournament brackets. How often when you enter a bracket pool does the person who knows the least about college basketball win? It's quite often.
It's a staggering percentage.
It's weird. It's their favorite mascot. It's the colors of the team. It's the school that they heard about one time 10 years ago. That's typically what happens when you do NCAA bracket pools. Now, I don't know if fantasy football is quite that relatable because I will say in our league, there's a couple of guys who are traditionally in the top four in the semifinals, the finals. One guy, I think, has won the league 3 times, so he's pretty good. I think there's every once in a while you have the outlier where there's a guy that really isn't good or shouldn't win the league, and he just does, or she for that matter.
And it's always so random. I mean, through 2 weeks, if you had Austin Eckler and John Ross in Cincinnati, you probably were 2-0 because those guys just went unbelievable. You know, they went off. And I think the 2 weeks, Austin Eckler was the number one running back in fantasy. So you spend your first round pick on McCaffrey. You spend your first round pick on Michael Thomas. You know, all offseason, there's these guys that in every draft are taken extremely, extremely high. And, you know, you happen to get Austin Eckler in the sixth round. You're probably 2-0. And that's what can happen is you can have, at the end of the day, it's all random and no one really knows. So if you have one or two guys that aren't supposed to go off and just go absolutely insane, I mean, any of the Chiefs receivers really, you're going to have a much higher chance to win big.
Yeah. So a couple of injuries have affected the football team. I was scared last night and I was playing against Aaron Rodgers, but as a guy that just enjoys watching him play, there was that strip sack that Derek Barnett had him last night and he was clutching his thumb a little bit and kind of flexing. I thought for a minute that he wasn't going to be able to participate. He ends up throwing up 26 on me, so I was a little disappointed about
just
that.
Just like last year where he, that first week against the Bears, we think he's out for the year. No, no, it's three touchdowns in the fourth quarter right in your face.
And he can't, and he can't move either. Right. It was one of the most incredible performances I've ever seen. So I lose Damian Williams, Chiefs running back, first week or so, and he hasn't really been back since or done much since, so I'm kind of worried about him. Is there an injury in y'all league? We talked about Saquon Barkley, but has there been an injury or injuries in your league or just in the NFL in general that you think have really affected fantasy football this year?
I think that the mass injuries of starting quarterbacks have really, really affected fantasy football
players. Let's go over them real quick. So you got Foles in Jacksonville.
Cam Newton.
For the
Ben Roethlisberger
for the Steelers, who's out for the year. Foles is two months. How long's Newton now?
I don't think Foles is playing the rest of the year. Newton is out until Kyle Allen comes back down to earth. Because as much as they wouldn't, as much as no one in that Panthers locker room would tell you, but Kyle Allen threw four touchdowns last week. They are not going to. He's going to be there until he's not doing that.
Yeah. So you got them. So that's three.
There's more two here.
I mean, you dropped Eli. I know he went in injury, but at one point he was the starting quarterback. Gardner Minshew's done a pretty good job for Foles in his place.
Obviously, Luck. Minshew, that guy's just...
Luck retiring. Brissett, also another guy that stepped up, and he's been helped by a really good offensive line and the defense that's kind of stepping up for the Colts. I'm trying to think if there's another one that we're not thinking of.
That's it as far as QBs out go.
Injuries go.
Yeah. But what that does is, on those teams, you know, you took guys like Michael Thomas really high. You took guys like Juju Smith-Schuster really high. And so when they lose their quarterbacks, it kind of changes the landscape entirely. You really have to be malleable as a fantasy football player because when these quarterbacks go down, that affects everyone on the roster.
Yeah.
And, you know,
I have James Conner. He's not going to be as impactful without Ben Roethlisberger throwing the football, 100%.
Right. And I think you kind of have to like look at the landscape as a whole, take those injuries into consideration, and say, okay, well, where can I go from here? Because, I mean, Jacoby Brissett is a startable option this week. You know, he hasn't thrown for less than two touchdowns all year. Jacoby Brissett at the beginning of the year isn't a guy you'd really ever consider to play. But with taking these injuries into consideration, you have to look that way.
I will say there was a couple fantasy guys that said this is going to be the guy to watch. Brissett's got the offensive line. He's got T.Y. Hilton. He's got Marlon Mack. He's got Hines.
Ebron.
He's got a couple guys.
Quentin Nelson.
I didn't believe him because I just assumed that they were just blowing smoke up our butts. But so far, he's been pretty good. So rookie-wise, and don't say an OU guy. I know Hollywood Brown's been fantastic. Stick outside of that.
He has.
Rookies that have just blown you away so far at this point of the season?
Blown me away.
Or just you've been surprised by their production?
I don't necessarily think that I would call this a surprise because he's a Kansas City Chief, but I mean, I don't know if there's a guy in the NFL faster than Mecole Hardman. And
might be faster than his teammate, Cheetah.
He took a post route 85 yards against my team last Sunday. And, you know, you put a guy like that with just that skill set, you know, in an offense where with Patrick Mahomes, who can, whenever he wants, throw it 70 yards down the field. Like, they're a threat to strike from any point on the field at any point in the game. Their 10-yard line, the opponent's 10-yard line. Hardman stands out to me. Listen, man, you told me I can't say it, but I will say it. Hollywood Brown just gets, he had 9 targets last week. He is Lamar Jackson's favorite guy. Lamar Jackson, this is kind of funny, to haze rookie Hollywood Brown. Hollywood has to drive him home after every game in practice. Kind of funny.
How close do they live to each other?
That I don't know. One of these days I'm going to...
Baltimore's, I feel like, a pretty big city, right?
I think in the DMV, it's just kind of outskirts and like suburbs. I think you could do D.C., Virginia. There's a lot of different areas that you can live. But back to Hollywood. He's getting that the worry with him after his week one just outbreak was he played like 12 plays. He played a very, very limited amount of snaps. And the concern was, well, he can't do this every week with 10 or 12 snaps. This last game against Kansas City, he had like 9 targets. If he's getting 9 targets a game, he's going to break one. He's going to break two. That's just, you cannot sit a guy who is being targeted with his skill set where most of the time he's running a route, it's deep past the secondary.
And for him to just be able to do that as a rookie, and I'm always shocked at the rookies that can come in. Not just necessarily, I'm not talking for them to make a Saquon Barkley impact, but even an intermediate impact because they're stepping up. And I know there's certain elements of college football. You can look to the SEC West, parts of the Big 12, parts of the Big 10 that are really competitive, and you're going against some really good football players. But you're going against the best of the position every single week in the NFL, and you're going to have to take that huge step. The playbook gets bigger. Your workload gets bigger. I'm just surprised in the fact that some of these guys can do that so quickly because this is not like basketball where the God-given talent is there and it's a lot easier to transition from high school to the NBA or college to the NBA because it's physical of a sport. But when these guys can do it in football, it just blows me away.
Yeah, like Zion could play in the NBA like 2 years ago, right? Like it was never a doubt with him.
You taking him rookie of the year? You see those odds that come on? Jaws second. I can't remember who's third, but he's got pretty good odds. I think he's like minus 125.
How about R.J. Barrett for rookie of the year? How about that? Put that one in the ticket.
He didn't look good preseason.
No, he didn't. Back to
not preseason, but summer league.
But that's a good point, and I think one of the things you can attribute it to is the NFL over the last couple of years, when people never said they would do it, has moved more to the college offense. And most of the reason for that is that they have to accommodate these guys that are running spreads in college. You know, what Deshaun Watson did at Clemson, what Mayfield did at Oklahoma, you know, what Kyler did. The NFL, like when Chip Kelly came in for the Eagles a few years ago, and everyone's the old school 85 Bears defensive guys are like, it'll never work, right? It didn't really work for Chip, but it is kind of working now. And that Rams-Chiefs game you saw last year, that looked like a Big 12 game. And so I think that the transition for these college quarterbacks is a lot easier than it used to be because you're running stuff out of shotgun. You know, they don't have to be under center and relearn everything.
Because LaFleur up there in Green Bay, Cliff Kingsbury down there in Arizona, you have obviously the Sean McVay, who really got everything started. I feel like once they saw Sean McVay, the NFL, a lot of GMs and owners, so we want that next pretty young, good-looking offense, dude, to come in. And that's kind of translated to the quarterbacks, which the college game, not necessarily is based off what they're running in the NFL, but they're taking a lot of college schemes and sets and trying to run them. And for McVay, we'll see what happens with LaFleur. They look pretty good last night, but they still weren't able to win. And then also with Kingsbury and Murray out there in Oklahoma, McVay's the one that's not necessarily perfected it, but been really good to this point. We'll see if those other guys and some of the other coaches that are trying to run those type of sets will be successful in the NFL.
Yeah, and that was the joke, right? In the offseason, it's like if you had a Corona with Sean McVay at a league meeting, you got a head coaching job. You know, Zach Taylor, the Bengals coach.
I forgot about him,
coach.
Too. Yeah.
LaFleur has been with him. I think he was in Tennessee last year. But, yeah, like, that's the new wave. And
he's not really looked at as, like, a pretty boy because the other three guys are, like, really good looking.
LaFleur, oh, my God. Like, get out of here with that. Like, he's an NFL head coach. He's 35.
Yeah.
And he looks like that. That doesn't bode well for guys like myself. But it's not all going to work. I mean, there's going to be flops. Like, yeah, I don't necessarily – like, Arizona's been fun thus far, but – going out and just hiring mass coaches because it worked.
A subpar college coach,
I mean,
too.
Sean McVay's got a photographic. Have you ever seen those things where he'll like rip off a play he
it's
ran
incredible.
3 years ago?
Yeah.
And it's like, they're not all going to be Sean McVay's. It's going to go belly up. And I almost kind of wonder if that overcorrects it. Like, the trends in the NFL, they're always changing. And I wonder how long this trend is going to last. But I will say this. It's fun. I mean, it's fun for now. Like, Kyler Murray's 5'9", and he's out there slinging it around for over 3. I mean, he brought Fitzgerald back to life.
Yeah. So that was, and we were watching that game in Chili's, and Fitzgerald looked like he was rejuvenated. And how old's he now? Like late 30s?
Kingsbury?
No. Fitzgerald. Fitzgerald's older than Kingsbury.
Yeah, he's close to 40.
Yeah.
You wouldn't know it by looking at him. Hey, are you looking forward to seeing Mahomes play in a dome?
Yeah. So, I like to watch him anytime he plays. Is that... It's kind of lame to say.
He's ungodly good.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, he loses Hill. He loses Kareem Hunt from last year. he's doing it with Shady McCoy and a guy named Darrell Williams and DeMarcus Robinson. I mean,
Go over that again. Hill's out with the not broken collarbone, but something up top.
Clavicle.
Yeah, something up top. He loses Damien Williams, his starting running back. Right. They signed McCoy, and then McCoy's now questionable.
You know, he's banged up. Yeah. Because LeSean McCoy has been questionable for the last 10 years. Yeah.
And then you said Darnell Williams, and then McCole Hardman, who's a rookie out of Georgia.
Yeah.
And DeMarcus Robinson, who I'm sure you could pull most NFL fans, and they have not only would they would have no idea who the guy is, but they have no idea who he'd play for. Even though he's a really stud wide receiver, he's probably going to get paid because his contract's up this year, or next year.
I'm not really sure. We joke a lot. A couple of my friends are really big Chiefs fans. We joke all the time that like DeMarcus Robinson has like 3 years, $40 million Detroit like written all over him. he's going to get paid, and then you'll never hear about him again.
So only got a few more minutes here, but kind of to go off that point. I always wonder about the guys in college who are absolute studs and just playmakers, but they play on a stacked roster. And this is, I think, evident with the USC teams back in the day, like Lindell White, Reggie Bush, Jarrett, Leinart, Steve Smith. I mean, those teams, you can look at some of those Oklahoma teams. I think a lot of Oklahoma guys have panned out of the NFL. Alabama is a good example. All those running backs that you thought were going to be great and didn't amount to anything really. Derrick Henry is the only running back that's kind of so far stood the test of time in the NFL? Is there another running back?
Yelvin,
I mean, Mark
Yelvin's okay. Jacobs has looked pretty good so far.
Yeah, Mark Ingram.
Ingram's really good.
It depends on who they are. It just seems like sometimes I always get worried when there's a really talented player that played on a really talented team in college. And I think that's more towards the quarterback position because you always wonder if he gets tossed into a bad situation, how is he going to react? How's his team going to be? And is he going to be able to look as good, Evan, without all these weapons surrounding him and a good offensive line?
That is one of the most interesting things in all of football to me. I look at a guy like Blaine Gabbert, right? Stud at Missouri. Throws the ball 100 miles an hour. I think he's taken like fifth or sixth overall, gets to Jacksonville.
They were going to the championship with him that year.
No one had a chance in Jacksonville. Like, I don't, like Brady, Mahomes, whoever you want to put in there, like the infrastructure, the skill positions.
Yeah.
There's a reason these teams, I'm not going to take a shot at Jacksonville. They're competitive, but there's a reason these teams are drafting in the top five every year. And when you have you're going different offensive coordinator every year, different head coach every other year. It's like these guys get into these situations, they go belly up. Then they're labeled as a bust when it's like, you know, what could he have done in a different offense? What could he have done in a stable environment? And like, that's kind of the argument for, I mean, Mahomes didn't even play his rookie year, right? He sat behind Alex Smith and he learned. And
Rodgers, same thing. Rodgers with Favre. Good organization.
It's, I don't even have the answer to it because the answer is really unknowable. But like, I'd be very curious to see, like, in a hypothetical situation, what could these busts have done in a stable environment? What could these busts have done in New England? What could these busts have done in an Andy Reid system? What could these busts do in a Sean McVay system?
And I'll give you a perfect example as we close it out here. People wonder all the time, not just because Bobby Petrino left him out to dry, and I'm referring to Tyler Wilson, left with John L. Smith, and he just got smacked around in 2012. But what if he'd been drafted by another organization outside the Oakland Raiders? And I know that the same question can be asked about Darren McFadden. What if he'd been drafted by a better organization? Because I thought of all the guys I'd ever seen in an Arkansas Razorbacks uniform that Darren McFadden was the most surefire of them all. And he really didn't have the NFL career that many predicted. With Tyler, he bounced around a little bit, and I thought he was a quarterback that would be able to make some noise in the NFL. Not necessarily be a perennial starter or anything, but have a few years and have some success, and you just didn't see that. And I think that's partially due to the organization that he was drafted to.
Most definitely. I mean, Sean McVay with C.J. Beathard last year were competitive. Not Sean McVay, I'm sorry, Kyle Shanahan.
Kyle Shanahan, yeah.
And, you know, that guy's a wizard, too, if you watch what he does. He just makes a rocket ship out of, like, a cotton ball and a toothpick. But
are Niners 3-0?
They are 3-0.
Okay, yeah.
They fumbled five times last week and still won.
Still won.
Pittsburgh 0-3, what a shame.
Yeah, Phil was ticked about that this week.
But, last year with Shanahan, Beathard looked competitive. That is, like, living proof to me that if a guy gets in the right situation, it's not always going to work. I mean, you know, for whatever reason.
Iowa quarterbacks never translate to the NFL. They don't even get drafted to the NFL.
Has there been an Iowa quarterback ever? Like, This is good use of radio time. I don't think so.
I love Drew Stanton in college, but I don't think he ever got drafted. That's a good question. Has there ever been an Iowa quarterback that's had...
Ricky Stanzi had a cup of coffee in the NFL. Backup.
Iowa quarterback. I'd have to think about that one. That might be a question that we think off air, but
yeah,
that's a good one.
That's the homework.
All right, man. That's going to do it for Fantasy Football Friday. Again, Evan Gentry, a friend of mine, a part of the Wormhole League here in Fort Smith. All right, man. Thanks for stopping by.
Thanks, Ty.
A show. I'm getting that for show.
New fantasy football interviews every Friday on HitThatLine.com.